welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. This week on the ABCA podcast is ABCA Soldier Sports NJCAA Division I Assistant Coach of the Year, Walter State Pitching Coach Sean Robinson. Robinson joined Walter State in 2014. Since then, the Senators have an overall record of 600-130 and have made six trips to the NJCAA World Series in Grand Junction, Colorado, earning five top three finishes nationally. Under Robinson's guidance, the Senators' pitching staffs have had 18 pitchers taken in the MLB draft and have had seven former pitchers pitch in the major leagues. In 12 seasons, Robinson has mentored 69 pitchers who signed with Division I schools. 23 of his former pitchers have gone on to sign professionally with major league organizations. In 8 of his 12 seasons, Robinson's pitching staffs have finished in the top 5 in the nation in strikeouts and have led the nation 3 times. The 2022 Senators staff set a school record with 679 Ks in the season. Robinson has twice guided the NJCAA National Pitcher of the Year, in 2016 with Jake Mednick and in 2022 with Cole Drake. Let's welcome Sean Robinson to the podcast. Here with Sean Robinson, ABCA Soldier Sports, NJCAA Division I Assistant Coach of the Year, Walter State Pitching Coach since 2014, but has had over 600 wins in his time at Walters and off to an 11-2 start this year. So, Sean, thanks for jumping on with me.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, you've been fortunate to be around some of the better coaches in this area with Coach Shelton and Coach Griffin. What did you kind of learn from those two guys?
Yeah, two totally different guys. But both great in their own respects. I was fortunate enough to work with Griff for a semester. He was the first coach that I worked under, and you're talking about just culture shock. With Griff, everything's kind of detailed and organized and like down to a T. Everything matters, from knowing the school history to obviously stuff on the field. Just a great practice organizer and working on everything. Then I came over here to Walter State with Coach Shelton, and then it was just perfection in everything. The standards and the expectations are set so high, and we don't stray from that. And you kind of see how both programs operate, and they're both different, but they both work. Obviously, Griff's had his success over there, and we've done a pretty good job here, and it was the success here was happening way before I got here. So it's two different things, but very, very fun and very hard demanding regardless.
And that's the art of coaching too, but that's also why you get around other different coaching staffs too, is to kind of learn that part, is that you can be successful doing it in a couple different ways.
Yeah, no doubt. And the thing that I found here is that I love Griff to death. Personality wise, he's a little bit more go-getter and out there than I am. And so my personality matches Coach Shelton's a little bit more from the day to day. But they both work, and even with the other coaches that have been with us throughout the years and all the other coaches that I've gotten to know, you understand that there's not a wrong way to do it. Yeah. Everybody, as long as you're yourself, it tends to work out. We had Coach Mike Korn with us for a little bit, who was another coach at coaching a team in the conference for 14 years. He made it to the World Series. He decided to come over here and be an assistant for a little bit. He's in high school now, but he was completely different in his own way as well. And he had the success himself. So it's different for everybody. Somebody told me a long time, just be yourself. And as long as you're focusing on the things that you want to focus on, then you'll find success.
Had you had much contact with Coach Shelton before he took over as head coach in 2014?
No. So really? I'm actually from Knoxville, which is, and I still live there, but it's like 45 minutes, 50 minutes from campus here. But when I got done playing, I got a volunteer spot with Coach Griffin. The pitching coach here was Joey Seaver. He was longtime assistant with Coach Shelton under Ken Campbell. And Coach Seaver took a job with the Texas Rangers over Christmas break. I knew about Walters, but never was recruited by Walters or anything like that. And I was just a volunteer coach at Carson Newman. And when Joey Seaver left to take that pro ball job, Coach Shelton needed a pitching guy. And I was expendable at Carson Newman. I actually came over here one day before practice at Carson Newman, quote unquote, interviewed, I guess. But like, and Coach Shelton still makes fun of me. I was wearing a Coastal Carolina pullover, like just not formal whatsoever. And then got fortunate enough to get the job, more of a desperation move by Coach Shelton, I guess. And fortunate enough, been able to stay here ever since. So
that's one of my first questions with young coaches when they ask. I'm like, well, are you going to be willing to move whenever you need to move? Because a lot of guys early on, you get your job, it's not going to be good timing during the year. You're going to get a job because of that, because somebody moved, took another job. Like, you have to be ready to move whenever you're ready.
And I've been very fortunate that I still live in the city that I grew up in. It's a good baseball program here, good location, good family. My family's still in Knoxville. My wife's family's still in Knoxville. I've been very fortunate in that aspect. But as far as getting the job itself, even getting the Carson Newman job was a connection from a high school coach. I remember my senior year of college sending out like 500 emails trying to get a grad assistant job, and nothing worked out. But then I'm mowing greens at a golf course the summer before, and Griff needed somebody. And so I got that. I was there for the fall and then was lucky enough to get this. So I've been very fortunate in that aspect that I haven't had to move. But the connections and just how I got the job remains true for most of baseball.
And that's an advantage for you being from that area, because you can talk about that area to people and recruits and families.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we got Gatlinburg right down the road, which is one of the most tourist visited areas. When it comes to the high school coaches, a lot of those high school coaches down in Knoxville, I don't know if they remember me, but I remember them, and we can talk about some of the certain players back in my day. And some of them, I've played with some of the younger coaches that are down there in Knoxville. So you get a good feel for what's going on down there.
Outside of being yourself, what are some of the other separators between good coaches and maybe average coaches?
I think the willing to work aspect of it and willing to do what it takes. And that was one thing here that I learned, was that like, recruiting is going to be number one, and it don't matter if it's coming out of the school budget, if you got to pull it out of your own pocket, if you got to drive your own car, if you got to go sleep on a couch, if you got to go sleep on a car, it don't matter if you're the last guy there at the tournament, staying up till 1 o'clock and back there at 7. Like, the ability to work and want to work, to me, is the biggest separator at this level. Obviously there's some other advantages that's different schools have and all that, but like, to close the gap or to separate yourself, the ability to work and do what it takes.
When did y'all get the field cleared up?
So we didn't get that first band that we were supposed to get, but we got it that next weekend, and it was clear about that next weekend. We were on the road. We went down to Florida. So we didn't have to get it off. We've been on the road every game so far. So we didn't have to get it off. And there was no getting it off early in the week. So we didn't even try. But ended up coming off a week later. Last year, the snow hit really bad before when our guys got to campus. And so we got it off then, and we were doing live ABs with just the infield cleared. I felt like a school up north. Like, we were ruining baseballs and everything, but you had to get guys ramped up. So,
yeah, I mean, did you have to adjust the schedule much for them throwing? Do you guys have much inside to be able to get work in?
So this is the first year we kind of have something. We have like this old barn. I call it the blue collar barn. It's just chain link and covered, and it's cold in the winter and it's hot during the summer. But there was a facility that opened up right down the road just by pure happenstance, and willing to work with us. And they got like 18 cages and indoors and that kind of stuff. So this is the first semester where we've been able to kind of go indoors and get a lot of work done. Usually the guys have been throwing up in the gym pitching wise throughout the years. You can't really do live ABs or anything indoors. But this new facilities, they need some people indoors between 11 and 3 or whatever before the kids get out. So they allow us to come use it. So that was really helpful this time, because we can just, with our cage, we got two cages, maybe 60 feet long. And so it's very limited space. But with this new facility, we can go in there and get a lot of work done.
You've had a great track record of sending guys to the next level, not just the college level, but the pro level. Just kind of go through the development calendar.
So the way we kind of do it, we are on the mound all year long. So when guys first get here, they know the expectation is to be one inning ready. And so we will inter squad that first week, and then we start our fall season. So we're fortunate enough to play Division I teams, and we get 14 dates to play fall games. That time's usually the evaluation period. And so we'll play. This year was brutal. We finished the fall with 6 straight Division I teams. But we got some high school travel teams that we play some other JUCO teams. We play our kind of like sophomore day against our conference where that gets scouted at MTSU. And then we play Division I teams. It's a good evaluation time. Kind of get the guys' feet wet, especially the freshmen that kind of don't know how things operate on game day. And then after that fall season, we go into our live sessions. And during that live session period is when I can kind of force guys to do things against hitters in a less competitive environment. With the fall season, guys are getting recruited, so I'm trying to show guys off as best as I can. I'm trying to show what they do well, trying to limit what else they can do. But once we get to that live at bat session, that's when we really try to focus on what it takes to get better. So I've had 14 games to evaluate and kind of see what they can and cannot do. And then during that live sessions, we're pushing the envelope a little bit. And so I might, if a guy's a really, really good breaking ball guy, I might not let him throw the breaking balls during that time, because, and it doesn't come into effect that much during the regular season, but once you get to the World Series, that changeup really comes into play. And if he doesn't have a changeup, that live at bat session is kind of when we first start implementing that. And the hitters will tell you pretty quickly what works and what doesn't. And so one of the biggest things for our development that I think is just our offense. They'll tell you pretty quickly, yes or no. That's been a big help. And then also the bullpens, like, we're still trying to figure things out. Here we are in the spring season, we're still trying to work on things during the bullpen. I also, during the games, will force the hand a little bit in advantage situations for us. So that if it, we'll just use changeup again, but like if a kid doesn't have that good changeup yet, I will throw it in an 0-2 count against a lefty just to see it and that kind of stuff. So a lot of mound time.
With those Division I games, do you script those out, or are you guys playing straight baseball with those? Like,
so,
guys know how many innings they're getting or how many pitches?
Yeah.
You script that out for them?
It's more so the fall. The reason why it's scripted, for the scouts, it's scripted. Towards the back end of the fall, we will not script it, just to kind of get them used to, like, getting their name called and having to go down to the bullpen and get ready. A lot of these guys now want 2 innings of warm up before they go into a game. And pros and cons to it, specifically in the fall, because you want your guys as prepared as they can be with the recruiting, but they also have to learn that, like, hey, a kid might get hit first couple batters of the inning, and you have to go down there and finish the inning. So you got to get hot quick, and they want to go down there and do drills and do plyos and do bands, and you kind of have to get that out of them.
How do you get to that with them? I think that's the hardest thing, because most of your guys, they would have started up to that point. If they're good, they're probably have started just about every game they've ever pitched before they get to you.
Yeah, that's been the thing. It's like everybody kind of has their own routine now, and nothing against the facilities, but like it's part of the facility culture is you have all the time in the world. But with us, like, depending if a guy needs a mental check, we'll wait till the very last minute. Like, even if the guy before him has a clean inning and we know who's going in the next inning, we'll wait until there's one out or something. Like, we'll give him a little bit of time, but we're going to push the envelope and force him to do it. Obviously not in a close game, obviously not against a really good team. Like, we want our guys prepared, but if we can afford to, we're going to force him to be quick. Obviously, and then you have the talk before the season starts, like, hey, like, we're going to communicate, and if we say just stretch, don't pick up a ball. And we'll communicate, like, based off the situation, reading the game. But sometimes you might just have to go down there and start chucking that baseball. And that's just part of the game.
Yeah, sprint work.
If you want to
sprint work today, if you want to get an inning here.
If you want to pitch, like, this is what you got to do. So, and it's not happened a lot, but we've sent guys down to the bullpen, and guys haven't been getting ready. And so we've sent somebody else just to prove a point.
Yeah, love it. So after the live sessions then in the wintertime, then how do you keep them going to get ready for the spring? Do you have any shutdown time for them at all?
So depending on the guy.
Yeah.
With us, we start the end of January, so it's go time. And with us all fall – you kind of don't want to just get guys, like, nobody will throw more than 3 innings in the fall. Like, we build everybody up just like the spring, but we cap them pretty much at 3 innings. If I do a shutdown, it's going to be for a week or 2 weeks, maybe 3. And even then, it's not a complete shutdown. I've been a big fan of the deload throw. So I'll throw 3 times a week at 60 feet for those guys. It's less intense. But they still keep that arm moving. So then once December kind of comes around, that on-ramp is a little easier and faster. Because, again, the expectation for them to come back in January is they need to be 2 or 3 innings ready. And by that, I mean they need to have 2 or 3 up-down bullpens for 2 or 3 innings. And they're not going to do that on day one, but – I like to overshoot the expectation for them. And then when they get here day one, they're not wrecked after their first live outing. Because if we're able to get on the field in January, we're doing it. And because with us opening up at the end of January, we got to get those pitch counts and innings ramped up. And so there's not much of a shutdown because I can't afford to. If anything, I'm going to shut guys down during the summer, kind of let them go, because we've been fortunate enough to play all the way up until June. And so there's not much. And then they go to summer ball and all that. So I haven't really shut guys down for, like, nothing for a month. Like, that just doesn't happen anymore.
Those up downs, how long are you having them wait before they get back on the mound? So, like, say they're throwing 2 sets, how long do you have them wait before they get back up?
So if they can have somebody else with them, like if they're at a facility or even if they're with us, we'll just kind of treat it just like 2 different teams pitching. So the other guy will go do his 15, 20 pitch inning or whatever. And then the other guy will come and we'll do it's timed now, but you get your 8 pitches on your first inning, then you get your 5 pitches and just kind of simulate it that way. But if not, we're waiting 10, 15 minutes if they don't have anybody else. But
do you think the clock's been good?
I like it.
I love it.
There's a lot of things I don't like now, but
what are some of the things you don't like now?
Obviously, the pickoff rule. Yeah, having to throw, having to throw it to a bag is ridiculous. I love the pitch clock, the 20 seconds. I just, especially now with the technology and the wristbands and everything, you can, it's easy. But like that pickoff rules, ridiculous.
I agree too. And I was going to ask you about the bands. I think the bands have been a good switch too, especially, you know, people are the traditionalists, but the traditionalists never had to deal with the pitch clock either.
Yeah.
Like I think you have to now with the pitch clock, like you have to be able to get it in quicker.
100%. And we did the microphone to the catcher, previously before the wristbands. And that was good too, to have that communication. I don't do both. I know some schools do both still. But the wristband, it just makes things easy and like kind of dummy proof. And you don't have to worry about that aspect of the game anymore, which for me is beneficial. I know there's still tips and stuff out there that hitters can get, but you just don't have to worry about it. And then I can put different cues and stuff on there that I can't, like I take away the, sign stealing, like I'm fine with that, but I take that away, but also get a way to communicate with the pitcher, because I can put different cues and stuff in there that I don't have to yell out of the dugout. Like I don't have to yell out, be quicker to the plate, so that to let the other team know that, hey, my guy's slow to the plate, you can take off. Like I can just send it through the wristband, and then the ability to have the whole infield use it if you wanted to.
I love that. I know part some, of it too.
Yeah. And we call all our plays with it. I know some guys are using it for hitters, and it just simplifies the
communication. I think that's the next step too, because same thing. It's dummy proof, but also opens up more of your offensive playbook. If you are a team that likes to do a lot of different things offensively, where it's drag, push, hit and run, I just think it opens up a lot of your playbook for you, because you can look on the wrist and see it rather than trying to figure out 15 different signs to try to get it relayed in.
100%. And then at our level, I'll tell you, they're not dummy proof, but it just simplifies that communication with them. And they don't have to go study a NFL quarterback playbook. Yeah. They just read it and know what to do.
Do you have a set guidelines in the spring, whether it's like innings or pitches, whether a guy goes out in the summertime? Because like you said, you guys go into the middle of June.
Yeah. No, we'll keep an eye on it as it's happening. The way it kind of shakes out is kind of like our top eight get majority of the innings. And even then, like our number one might get 70 to 80 innings. So it's not terrible. Like our conference, we play 2 7s and a 9. So we're not playing every 9-inning game. So there's a lot less innings than a Division I pitcher will say. So those innings don't really creep up as high as a lot of the bigger schools do. But we will monitor it. And we have a good relationship with the Appy League up here, where we send a lot of our guys, and they're good with it. So, and if we have to, we'll do second half contracts, or we'll pull somebody out. But because we know that we can monitor it in the fall, like we know what we're doing in the fall. So like they can go pitch, and I don't summer ball. I don't require summer ball. If a guy wants to do it, he can.
Then with maybe the lack of innings in the spring, do you guys inter-squad a lot?
All the time.
Yeah, I figured probably try to keep guys sharp, right?
Yeah, so we try to go at least once a week. With our redshirt arms, we're still working with them, developing them. They still practice with us every day. But for those guys to get at bats and innings, but also those guys that are on the roster who aren't getting as many innings, to keep them throwing, the hitters that are coming off the bench or something like that, keep them sharp. I mean, it pretty much averages out to once a week we're inter squad. And so like even guys might have 5 to 10 innings on the spring roster on their stat line, but they got another 20, 30 during the season. So, and it, like last year during the World Series, those guys had to come up big and
throw. Grand like, Junction, you're going to need everybody. It's all hands on deck. It's all hands on deck in Grand Junction.
Yeah. And like we played McLennan on Friday, on Thursday, and we were undefeated at that point, and they took a big lead, and that was the opportunity for those guys to throw. And what ended up happening was McLennan never could run roll us. We kept pushing the game further and further because of our arms, and we had a guy that didn't throw for us at all during the spring, but because he was throwing an inner squad, he ends up throwing two scoreless out there. And what that did is it made them use their bullpen. And then come Friday, we ended up pulling it out against them in a good game. But you just never know. Like, those guys throwing an inner squad are throwing these meaningful innings in the third to last game of the year. And we stay on them about that.
Your lifting schedule similar in the fall and the spring?
Split up in the fall. During the fall season, we're going 2 days a week, try to go 2 days a week, because again, that's the recruiting season. Like, and that's one of the things I've thought about and struggled with our guys. But once we hit that live at bat session, we're 3 days a week, no matter what. So we go Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the weight room. And then Tuesday, Thursdays are our team conditioning days. So they're getting something 5 days a week, but we're lifting 3 days a week. I used to go four, but it just was too much for the guys. So we knocked it down to three. And then in the spring, we're trying for 2 days a week again, kind of depending on our travel schedule. Like, the weekend guys, they kind of know, so they can maintain theirs a little bit more. But like here in this early season, like, we left Thursday to go down to Florida two weeks ago. So we did Monday, Tuesday. But if we have a Wednesday game, I might go Wednesday, Thursday or something like that. So
we had a travel workout for guys just to get the body moving, get off the bus. Yeah. It wasn't taxing, but it was at least something to get the body moving.
You move
moving,
them, get the do body mobility moving. Circuits, yep. That kind of stuff, just kind of guys sitting on the bus. Because we don't, unless it's a really long trip, we travel same day. Yep. So like, one of the things is just get moving beforehand.
What do your team conditioning days look like? Those Tuesday, Thursday team conditioning days, what are those?
Yeah, like? So this is something that was here way before, and it's a thing of legend. They call it the tennis courts. We don't have tennis courts anymore, but the name has stayed. We do like little stations with ab bands and med balls, some agilities and that kind of stuff. And then we hook up these body bands, these thick bands, and we just tie them onto each other, and they're doing high knees and side shuffles and back pedals and still breaks, and they're just basically pulling their teammates with them. And depending on how we're feeling that day, they can, like, they'll get after it.
What about the 7-week throwing program then? So for your starters, what's that look like?
So I'm a big fan of throwing. And if we're going to do one thing, yeah, like,
thank you. Thank you.
I say let it fly every day. Like, obviously we
listen
want
to your
know
body. Listen to your body, yeah. But
obviously we want to know how you're feeling and kind of know when your next outing is going to be. But like, even that day after, like, stretch it out as far as you can. I'm not looking for high intent by any means, but I want to stretch it out. And then we kind of do this up, down, mid, low, medium, high, working throughout the week. Some guys like to go 2 days bullpen. Other guys like to go 3 days out. And kind of depending on which one of those days they are, kind of determine the intent of it. But usually stretch it out the day after you throw. And then that second day, we're going to put a little bit more on it. And then you can kind of taper it back down on day three, day four, bullpen, and then day five, stretch it out a little bit. Day six, light catch, just kind of move. If you want to do a short box, you can do a short box. I think guys have gotten that from me, because when I played, I went bullpen 2 days out, then a short box the day before, and I kind of blew their mind with being on the mound 3 days
before.
Our better
command guys would do that.
And that's what I was. Like,
our
I was
better
just,
command guys would do that.
Yeah, and I tell guys, like, even like the relievers, if you haven't been on a mound in 3 days, get on the mound. Yes. I don't care if I'm there. I don't care if it's like right after a game. Like, if you haven't been on the mound in 3 days. And then some guys will put on the mound every day, whether it's 5 pitches, 10 pitches, low effort. We're just kind of going down.
Even with the catcher short, if needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that when's a lift day then? So you start, say your Friday starters, that they lift Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah, they'll go Saturday, and then they'll have try to go back day? Again. Yeah. Just again, just kind of want to go heavier, closer to the outing, and then a little bit lighter up into your next outing, just because you want the body as rested and recovered as possible.
You guys have different pregame warm-ups then too? You give guys freedom on the pregame, what they're getting done on pregame?
Yeah, 100%. Like, if you come watch us, you'll see everybody do everything. When I first got in back in, like, 2014, like, you kind of dictated what guys did. Like, you were the guy with the information. Like, you told them what to do. But now everybody's got their routine.
Yeah, like, I think that's the biggest difference now. I think that's why guys are throwing harder, too, is, like, they've got a pretty set routine before they get to college.
Yeah. And so the biggest thing is just making sure they know why they're doing it, making sure they're not hurting themselves. And then what I do is I ask them every day, specifically in the fall, like on a number scale, 1 to 10, how do you feel? And if they're running 5s 3 days in a row, then we know like something's got to change. Yep. And it's for my benefit and theirs. And so then we will go change the warm up, whether we got to cut the intensity or the volume of plyos down, whether we do got to throw more, whether we got to up the recovery more, just that communication piece of it. But I mean, everybody's got the plyos, the water bags, different bands and heavy implements. I mean, when I first got here in 2014, Brent Honeywell was using a 6-pound iron ball, just like Mike Marshall. So like, that was my first introduction.
That's Mariano Rivera too. He used a 6-pound.
Yeah. And to this day, we still use it, and it's still my favorite implement when I'm trying to get loose to throw with guys. But I want guys to have their routine and they come in with that, but also I want them to see what other guys are doing and then trying to figure out what they like and what they don't like. I call it, when I tell recruits, it's like going to McDonald's, or the first time you go to a restaurant, you don't know what you're going to do, but you go to McDonald's, you know what you're going to get. And that's our job in the fall, is trying to figure out those menu items that we like to do. And then once you get to the spring, you know what you're ordering. And so if somebody comes in with something new, we'll look at it and all that. But guys have it kind of dialed in now.
What about post throw? So say they're done for the day. They do anything post throw, or they just get away from it or do anything?
They just, some guys will go do their bands and that kind of stuff. Kind of like a Tony Robichaud thing. It was like they just ran a marathon.
Exactly.
And so it's just kind of, I want them hanging out. I want them supporting their teammates, specifically if they left some guys on base and that kind of stuff. We make them stay in the dugout until the runners that they are responsible for are done. But once they are going into the recovery time, they can just chill and hang out. And then that next day is when we start that process.
With your guys that have gone on to the next level, because there's some big names in there, what have they relayed back to you guys as a staff, or maybe to your current players, as far as going to the next level?
Just the detail. Like, there's a professionalism before you're a professional. And it's like, it might be mundane, it might be monotonous. It's just things you have to do. And if you don't, you're getting left behind. And when the thing with pro ball is, it's your career. You have coaches and everything, but it's a little different because here at the college level, we're kind of responsible for your development and making sure you do the things you're supposed to do. Pro ball, they got all the guys in the world to choose from. And so if you don't do what you're supposed to do, then you can be done. And so the biggest thing is, like, and I see it with some of the better players that we've had, that professionalism before you become a professional. And it's one of the biggest separators.
I think the elite don't find those things mundane. I think they find a way to be passionate about it too. Like, what an average player person would find mundane, I just don't think they're wired so different. Like, they don't see it as mundane at all.
Yeah, a lot of the guys we get have been good wherever they've gone. And that's the same thing for these professional guys. But when they get to the higher level, so for the high school kid, us, they still think they're the best guy on the team. And so they just still do the same thing they've done. But the guys that end up going to the Power Fours or the Pro Bowl, they understand that they're competing with everybody throughout the country. And so they go about their business in that way, and they enjoy that. And they understand that this is what's going to get them better.
What got you here won't get you there.
Nope.
Is there internal pressure on you all to get to Grand Junction, or do you even talk about Grand Junction?
Oh, we talk about Grand Junction all the time.
Love it.
Like, that's the expectation. Every recruit that I show around, we show them the national championship trophy from 2006. I tell them every sprint you run, every weight you lift, every ball you throw is to get there. We can win regular season championships. The tournament's really hard. The conference tournament's really hard to win. But those are things that we've done, we've continued to do. The expectation is Grand Junction and the national championship. Like, that's what we're doing it for. And everybody knows it. We play videos from out there. We put it in their head. This is what we're doing. 2022, 2023, we didn't go out there. And so last year's group was the first group in a long time that not a single person had been there. And those guys have came back this year, and they understand now. And so hopefully we're going to keep moving forward with that. But the guys that have been out there understand what it's like and what it takes. And so we have a good group of older guys that understand, like, this is what we're pushing for.
Are you using much tech with guys? Do you use much tech?
Not really. I mean, we've tried. We are about to get TrackMan, I think. And that's one thing going to Grand Junction is you realize the zone, the strike zone's a lot different. Like, we're dealing with the umpires that we deal with throughout the year, and then get out to Grand Junction, that thing has shrunk so tight. So we want to train with that. Obviously the scouts like it. So just be able to have that information. But we've done the Rapsodos, we've done Yakertex and that kind of stuff. And, it's not what I go to first. Some guys, in fact, I make sure they stay away from it because that's all they think about. My biggest job here is to teach guys how to pitch and how to win ball games. And that's throwing strikes, that's holding runners, that's all that kind of stuff.
When do you tweak somebody's pitch arsenal?
When they're getting hit. Like, and my first thing would be to get rid of the bad pitches. Like, I track everything. I still use paper clipboard. I still manually input pitches into the computer, like, because I don't have that tech. Like, I'm still manually inputting it. And so, kind of stat sniping a little bit and kind of seeing what's working, what's not. I'll get rid of pitches before I add pitches, because I won't add a pitch unless I think it's good enough. But that goes into, like, throwing them in inner squads, throwing them in advantage counts in games or in the fall, bullpens and live sessions and that kind of stuff. But I am interested into the analytics part of it, so I'm taking in all that information. My guys are so, and I definitely don't coach too much to it. I try to coach without them knowing it. So, like, if I see a guy with a bad fastball, and then we'll tweak it to some degree. If I see a guy with a lower arm slot, or he throws good breaking balls, he can't throw a changeup, he's probably a supinator. So we'll try to mix up that changeup to seam shifted or something like that. Just try to switch it up.
You script their bullpens for him?
No. So we'll go, were you bad at last time, or what's coming up? So, like, now that we're in season, like, we can kind of do scout reports and kind of prepare guys for what to expect. Or if a guy struggled, like, you're not getting in unless we fix this, so let's do that. And I want that to be the main focus. Like, so I'm not going sequences or anything like that. Like, throw your couple fastballs, and then, all right, let's make sure this breaking ball is not backing up on us. Like, I'll move the catcher into the left-hander's batter's box just to force it. Like, I just want them to get different feels and that kind of stuff. And then we communicate good ones and bad ones, and I ask more questions than I tell and bullpens, like what was the difference between these two pitches? What'd you feel? That kind of stuff. And it really is just more of like a feel thing and a mentality thing than a, oh, I'm just going to follow this script. If I hit it, yes. If I don't, no, and move on. It's like, no, we're working on this thing. I don't care if it's 20 pitches of the same thing. Like, this is what we're working on.
This has been a topic I thought about for a while. Who dictates for you who's on the arm side of the rubber and who's on the glove side of the rubber for pitchers?
I let them do it.
Do you?
Like, yeah.
It drives me nuts. I watch so many games, and I'm like, there's so many guys on the glove side of the rubber that shouldn't be on the glove side of the rubber.
And I take it kind of how I was as a player. I was like a two-seam sinker guy, and so I like being on the third base side because I feel like I can get in.
But you were a guy that should have been on that side.
Yeah, and so we'll have some guys like lower arm slots that try to – that will tell to move over. It's just more so like we'll talk to the hitters about it, like what they think. Like, some, this guy's a hard at bat because it comes from behind me.
Yes.
And so you let the pitches dictate it. But also I know especially now is not the time to do that because
yes,
I did try to experiment and I understood like this is a completely different feel. Yep. Like it's a – But if guys are having directional problems or throwing strikes, then we can switch it up like that. But it's not something that I do a lot of.
I had a couple mid-season switches that actually helped guys because they just were out of sorts.
So yeah.
Switching the arm side. And good, they had really good breaking balls and just trying to discuss angles, making the hitter uncomfortable. You know, it was more of an advantage for those guys to be on the arm side of the rubber
than
it was on the glove side. Their stuff was so flat on the glove side, it gave the hitters the hitter was not uncomfortable. Just gave nothing to keep the hitter honest with. I also think TrackMan too and the tighter zones, I think that's why we see more of it too. It is a tighter zone now. It really is. Yeah, it's a tighter strike zone now. It is.
Yeah, I think umpires err on the side of calling balls more so than strikes because of it now.
Yeah.
But like if that's one reason why I'm glad we're getting TrackMan is being able to train to it and understand it from a hitter's perspective and a pitching perspective. But sometimes like you're talking about the midseason changes, sometimes you just got to go for broke and you got to figure out.
Yeah. It's either that or they're going to have a hard time getting on the field ever again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's no doubt. One time you can do it with guys when the game is handing it to them so much that they're going to be willing to make changes because the game's just giving it to them at that point.
Yeah. And here we go. We're going to try to figure it out and try to make it as successful as we can be.
You still seem like you're a little bit of an old school recruiter where you'll get on the road and go watch games.
Yeah. So we don't necessarily have the budget just to go out willy-nilly and that kind of stuff. We hit the big tournaments. Our big one is Jupiter. We make sure we go to Jupiter every year. But being in Knoxville, Lake Point's 3 hours away. East Cobb's 3.5 away. So I've made day trips before. Spent 3 weeks down there before. My first time down there as a recruiter, I was actually working for Perfect Games. So I got to be down there for 3 straight weeks. But it's a lot of – we try to go to everything, at least Middle Tennessee and over here to the east. Memphis gets a little hard to get to, but we try to go to everything, whether it's a pop-up showcase, whether it's a smaller showcase, PBR, Perfect Game, whether it's just an inner squad of a high school game. Like if it's within 4 hours, we're probably doing a day trip just to do it.
I had a couple, 3 different states in one day back in the old days, trying to hit it all.
Yeah.
It seems like your pocket, though, can guys still get hidden out in your part of the world? In East Tennessee?
It's hard.
Mountains, probably can't hide anybody out anymore.
You can't hide anybody anymore. Like, I mean, with social media, and it's getting more on social media. We still trust our eyes. We still want to
There's still something about being in the ballpark, though, too. Like, I get the video portion of it, but I still like going, even if it's just college stuff now. You see so much more about the game and players by being in the ballpark than you do watching off of video.
100%. Like,
even like scouting stuff. I know, you know, synergy's big, but you're seeing like 3-second clips of just the pitch and the swing. Like there's so much more to the game of baseball than just when the pitch is being thrown or hit. Like, there's so much more to it.
Yeah. Like, I think you can say yes or no based on video, or at least gauge your interest of guy on a video. But, like, you have to go see a guy, and you have to get the context of everything. Like, what's the arm that he's facing? Like, obviously, it's more of a highlight tape on social media, but, like, did he swing and miss at that same pitch he just hit? So that's an adjustment that he just made. Is he upset because of his defense? And so it took him out of an at-bat. That kind of stuff. And we're fortunate enough here at junior college to work out guys. Yeah. And we can bring guys up whenever we want. And so you kind of get a little bit more detailed, and you can lay eyes on guys pretty easy. But, yeah, you have to get to the ballpark. And it goes to branding as well. Like, forget the recruiting aspect and trying to find players. Like, people know Walter State because they see our logo out there all the time. Like, and I do think that every time you go recruit, it does something. You find a player, you cross off a player, or somebody sees
biggest
you.
Biggest one's crossing guys off. I tell our guys with the pro scouts, I'm like, the pro scouts aren't coming to draft you. They're coming to cross you off the list. To save them time.
They're trying to find a way.
They're trying to figure out a way to not, especially with the 20 rounds now, they're trying to figure out a way to not draft you.
100%. It's getting tougher and tougher. And the more information you can get, the better it is.
For high school and maybe some of the facility side guys that are dealing with the high school kids, what do they need to hear? Or what are you not seeing from guys when they show up that maybe you feel like they could get a little bit more before they get to you?
Well, I don't know how much you can do this. But just like I said earlier, my job is teaching guys how to pitch. Like, we got good arms. Like, our stuff's fine. But can they throw strikes? Can they throw off speed behind the count? Can they throw any pitch, anytime, any place? And can they hold runners? Are they quick to the plate? Like, we get guys all the time that throw really hard, but like, big leg lifts and wind ups, and they're trying to get everything they can out of it. Can they do that while holding a runner? Do they know how to sequence and that kind of stuff? Can they see what hitters are doing? Like, instead of just relying on me, like, I just got done talking to a guy yesterday about, don't leave it up to me to make the adjustment. Like, you can't wait until you get back into the dugout for me to tell you what's going on. You have to be able to make the adjustment pitch by pitch. Like, facilities are really good of getting guys better. There's no doubt about that. Like, guys are better than they ever have been. But the game has not changed. You still have to throw strikes. You still have to hold runners. You still have to field your position. And that's kind of what we do here. We've been fortunate enough to win a lot of games. And we do that because we try to teach them the things it takes to win games. And I think the Division I guys understand that too, that recruit our guys. They understand. A lot of coaches have told us, your guys know how to win. And that matters in that recruiting process. Like, the stuff's the stuff.
I mean, I flipped on Coastal and College of Charleston for a midweek game last. There was multiple freshmen throwing mid-90s. And it's like,
it's ridiculous now.
It's ridiculous. Multiple freshmen. It wasn't just like one of them. It was multiple freshmen. Like,
I feel bad for high school kids because there's some good high school players getting left out.
Yeah.
But in the nature of the game now, like, that stuff does matter. Like, and I'm not going to sit here and lie. Like, I love velo. Strikeout is my favorite thing that happens in baseball.
It makes life a lot easier.
And you have to have certain attributes to your pitches in order to get most of those strikeouts. But also, you got to get to two strikes before you can strike somebody out. Like, we have to be able to throw strikes. We have to be in the zone. And that's why I'm saying, like, facilities just, I don't know if they can do that stuff.
It's hard to replicate that inside.
Yeah. I think that's the benefit of how much we are on the mound and how much we inter squad. And we're fortunate enough to play those fall games. Like,
yeah, and I was going to add, you know, those six D1s you played makes that conversation about the changeup a little bit easier, because a good high school kid's never going to throw a changeup because it's in the hitter's bat speed. But that makes that conversation a little bit easier with your freshmen. Like, hey, you're going to have to counteract bat speed with a changeup at some point.
Oh, yeah. You go play 12, 14 innings against North Carolina, you're going to learn pretty quickly like what it takes to get these guys out. And all our guys strive to be at these places. Well, this is what it takes. Yep. Like, forget the we didn't see a breaking ball under 2,800 from North Carolina this year. They can throw it whenever they want. They're throwing it in the strikes. They're not just wasting these pitches. Like, they get to see what it takes at that level, and then they learn pretty quickly what it takes to get those hitters out. And it does tough because we do take our licks, and it's brutal to go in there and get whooped.
Yeah, but the game teaches those things too. Like, if you don't ever go get challenged, you don't know what you need to work on. And unless you go get challenged, you have no idea what you should work on.
Yeah. And again, our aspirations are Grand Junction. You get out to Grand Junction, those teams are ridiculously good. Like, you're seeing those 90-plus arms. You're seeing 95. I mean, Central Arizona had 97 on pitch 95 in 2021. So that stuff's there. And so you have to be able to get those guys out. Like, and with Grand Junction, the offensive environment out there is unbelievable. And so you have to learn, like, you can't let people on because anybody can leave the ballpark at any point. And so you're facing good teams out there. And that's what, like, we schedule these Division I teams because of that. Like, we want to be challenged. We want to play the best teams that we possibly can because we know that's what it takes to achieve our goals.
All right. Give us your fail forward moment. Something you thought was going to set you back, but looking back now, it helped you move forward. Could be professionally, could be personally.
Yeah. Almost getting a job. I mean, I was looking at houses. I was willing to move my family, willing to move my wife, who was 2 months away from having our second kid, to the point where she was going to stay here. Didn't get the job. And then I look back and I'm like, I would miss last year. Like, I got to see a group of guys that deserved to go out there and earned it and got to see what it was all about and see it on their face, how much they enjoyed it. Like, it's fun for me going out there. I've been fortunate enough to be out there 6 times now, but that group of guys that hadn't gone yet and got to experience the tourist stuff that we do, the day in, day out, them getting treated like big leaguers, like kids coming up for their autographs and stuff. Like, that group specifically, I was very happy they got to go. And I would have missed that. I would have missed a couple years before and a couple of those guys. Like,
it's hard in the beginning when you get into it because you think about all the jobs you got turned down. But then eventually you're like, okay, it worked out the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, that was the first job.
You're supposed to be there for a reason.
Yeah, like, that was the first job that, like, I was – kind of excited about. Interview for other jobs just to see and try to get my feet wet, understand that process. But this was the first job that I was kind of excited about. Something different, something challenging. And I didn't get it. But then I sit there and I'm like, what am I doing now? Like, fortunate enough to get the award that you all handed out and that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I'm definitely where I'm supposed to be right now. And the thing with that job was I wasn't looking. Like, I made a decision a long time ago not to look for jobs. If they come, they come. I'm happy where I'm at. And so, like, I felt like things were going the way they're supposed to, and then it didn't. But here I am, and I still love it every day.
How are you handling young kids in the house?
It's wild. We're dealing with potty mouths now for a 4-year-old. Yes. I got a 2-year-old, and she's expecting again at the end of June, a girl this time. So 2 boys and a girl coming. It's wild. I love it. It's the best thing. Like, my 4-year-old asked me why he couldn't come today. And I'm like, I'm talking to somebody on a computer. I can't have you in this background right now.
That's great though. You're bringing them though. So you bring, how often do you get it? Those are some of my best memories as a kid. I did a Coach's Wives podcast this week. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to record that, because it is good information. But those are some of my best memories as a kid, was either running around at a little rug rat in the office or being on the field, just running around.
And I try to do it when we're kind of like low key and we're not doing too much. And it happens a lot, like, once the postseason gets here, because our days are a little bit lighter. But I bring him up all the time as much as I can. And I got a picture on my phone of Coach Shelton meeting with the team in the outfield, and I'm sitting there catching his ball off the mound, and he's swinging wiffle ball bats and stuff. And they're a little hard for my wife right now, so that makes it a little difficult.
This is the hardest time.
Yeah, but I look forward to it.
That's the hardest time is with that second one. When the other one's moving around now, that's the hardest time.
Yeah, and we got some ladies here that befriended my wife, and my wife's really good friends with them, and so they'll come to the field and help watch them and that kind of stuff.
What did you think of the convention?
Loved it, specifically Columbus. It's a big city, but not a big city. It definitely doesn't compare to Nashville population wise and that kind of stuff. But it was more my vibe. Like,
it's got some Knoxville feel to it, actually.
Yeah, it was a bigger city, but more down, low key, chill. I loved it being downtown right there, within walking distance of plenty of restaurants and that kind of stuff. But always, it's the kickoff to the year. You see everybody. You get to see people you talk to on the phone most of the year. It's kind of like what we get in this for, that brotherhood, that community. Like, I felt bad because I brought my wife, and I felt like the secret got let out a little bit, like why we like to go so much. It's just hanging out with
your friends.
That's a great
thing for the wives to come to, though, too, is they see, like, unless you haven't really been there, like, you have no idea, and then you get there, and you're like, oh, this is why they enjoy it so much.
Yeah, and she's a nurse, and she compared it kind of like some of her conferences and stuff, and she's like, I get it. Like, these are your people. This is
your tribe.
What you like to do. Yeah.
Any other changes? I think the 8-team format's going to be a good change. Any other changes you'd like to see with baseball overall or NJCA?
They're talking about moving the, like, super regionals and regionals and that kind of stuff. So that's going to be interesting, kind of see how it is. I was just talking about this the other day. I wish conference weekends were kind of standardized. Yeah. Like, we play 2 7s and a 9. Other teams play 4 games. Some, we play all ours on the weekends. Some play weekends. And I get it. It's budgets and travel and facilities and that kind of stuff. So you have to make do with what you can. I would like to see it kind of standardized a little bit. I wish NCAA would kind of figure out what junior college eligibility would be. As of right now, it counts, but we're getting more questions every year about it.
Would you like the 5 for 5? I think the 5 for 5 is probably the simplest way to. I think that's the only way you simplify it for everybody.
Just simple.
Once you start, you got 5. Whether that means you played 5 years or you redshirted a year, I think it gets rid of the redshirting. I think that's the simplest way to attack that. Is just once your clock starts, you got 5 years to finish.
Yeah. Just simplify it and kind of, but I mean, that's not up to us and NJCAA, but like because of that, we're getting all these questions and that kind of stuff. So I wish something would happen with that. But I think the conferences right now will kind of be one of my things. And then, I mean, we're seeing more and more schools drop out, making it harder for games and making it harder for those conference tournaments and bids and that kind of stuff. So, and maybe that would be the other thing. I like to see some bids, auto bids, because softball has it.
Yeah, and I think you guys are heading in that direction.
Yeah,
you're heading in that direction.
We'll see what's coming. As always, as junior college coach, will adapt and survive.
All baseball coaches do.
Yeah.
All right. What's some final thoughts before I let you go?
Junior college baseball's really good.
It's at an all-time high, by the way. All-time high.
Like, I mean, not even just us. I mean, I think as a whole, it's getting better. You obviously have the programs that have traditionally been good, and we're fortunate enough to be one of those programs. But it's good, and that there's pros to that where you're going to come here and get better, and you're going to get exposed to a lot of four-year schools. But also, you might not be as good as you think you are for junior college. Yep. And that's just the reality of it. But junior college baseball is really good. And it's we still have that negative connotation with grades and academics.
It's crazy to me that that's still around. It shouldn't be a thing.
But like, I mean, I haven't heard of a Division I guy failing out yet in the past 5 years. So it's like these schools are getting players that can play, and it's not just because of their grades. So
love it.
I'm all in on junior college baseball.
Love it. Thanks for your time, Sean. Appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I love recording with our assistant coaches so we can get in the weeds on player development. Congrats to Coach Robinson, and best of luck to the Senators the rest of the season. Thanks again to John Litchfield, Zach Hale, and Matt West in the ABC office for all the help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok, CoachB_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyABC app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you. Keeps on turning, and your life is not for yearning, and you know that way. Yep, wait for another day, and the world will always be turning, and your life is never for yearning, and you know that way. Wait for another.